Why is light given to those in misery, and life to the bitter of soul, to those who long for death that does not come, who search for it more than for hidden treasure, who are filled with gladness and rejoice when they reach the grave? Why is life given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? For sighing has become my daily food, my groans pour out like water. What I feared has come upon me, what I dreaded has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness, I have no rest, but only turmoil.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, there we go. Thank you, Joe. He told me he stole my mic. It's Joe's fault. That's okay. So if I was to pull you aside right after worship, before Bible class, and was to say to you some of the very same things that Job said in chapter 3, things like, I wish I was dead, I won't have any rest until I'm in a casket buried in the earth, I don't know why I'm alive, I wish I never existed, I wish I never was born, I hate my life, I want to die. If I was to say those things to you, what would you do? Would you pass me off, say, Dan, Steve needs to talk to you. Would you call 911 and send me to JPS, to the psychiatric ward? Would you make an appointment for me at Christian Works to see a counselor? Would you offer a prayer? Would you say, don't worry, Steve, this day's going to be better. Just, it's okay. My sense is that if I was to pull you aside and begin to say those kinds of things to you, you would become very uncomfortable. Maybe not even know exactly what to say. And there might even be a part of you that would think, okay, Steve, you need to get over this. Yeah, life is tough, and I understand you might be down in the dumps. Maybe your sermon didn't go as well as you thought, but you can get over this. You can move forward. Come on, don't be melodramatic. Preachers aren't supposed to talk that way. And yet, according to the Bible, one of the greatest men that ever lived, who received more compliments from God than just about any other man, said and had those kinds of thoughts and those kinds of feelings. Last week we began our series on the book of Job, and we noticed that Job was a man who really had it all. Had a wonderful family of 10 children. He was very wealthy, had a lot of livestock. He had a lot of power with many different servants, and he was just a good, righteous man. He was a good man. And then in a flash, in the twinkling of an eye, everything's taken away. His children all die in one day. He loses all of his livestock, all the oxen and the camels and the sheep. And then he even loses his own health. And the picture we have of Job, at the end of Job chapter 2, is this man who's suffering from boils. He's almost like a leper. He's isolated. He's all by himself. And we learn that all of this is happening because God is trying to figure out what kind of faith Job has. Well, after these two rounds of tragedies, Job is relegated to silence for 7 days. Doesn't say anything for 7 days. Three friends come to see him, Bildad, Zophar, and Eliphaz, and they don't say anything either. They just sit with him in silence for 7 days, because sometimes when you've experienced tragedy, that's what you need. You need someone to come and sit with you and just be there in silence, not say anything. But then after those 7 days, Job begins to speak. And what's fascinating about Job chapter 3 is he doesn't address it to God, what he says. He doesn't address it to his friends. He doesn't really address it to anybody. He just speaks. Because sometimes your emotions and your feelings can get so wound up in your mind that you just got to talk. Because that's part of the healing process, is talking. And so Job talks. And he begins by saying, cursed be the day that I was born. He talks about in Hebrew his day. What is your day? My day was May 10th, 1980. Please write that down in your calendars so you can send me a card later on. My wife's day was November 7th, 1979. Joshua's day was November 15th, 2006. Bethany's day was June 23rd, 2009. Lydia's day was December 22nd, 2011. What is your day? So when your day comes around, we throw a party, don't we? We celebrate your day. We get a cake. We put candles on that cake. We pin dollar bills to your shirt. We give you gifts. We do all kinds of things to celebrate your day because it's a good thing. And what Job does in Job chapter 3, he does the exact opposite. Instead of singing happy birthday, he says, cursed be my day. I wish it never happened. I wish it never existed. On the first day of the world, God said, let there be light. On my first day of the world, Job says, I wish God said, let there be darkness. He says, I wish that it never happened that someone yelled to my mother and father, you have a beautiful baby boy. I wish it never happened. I wish that the pregnancy had not been smooth. I wish that the delivery had been challenging. I wish there were no baby showers. I wish there was no baby room. I wish there were no doctors and nurses that caught me when I came out of my mother's womb. I wish it just never happened. Cursed be my day. Now, why is Job saying this? I mean, yes, he's been through several tragedies, but before those tragedies, he had a pretty good life. Had a wonderful life. And we would think that Job would want to be cursing something else, cursing the Sabaeans for taking his oxen and other livestock, or cursing the Chaldeans for taking his camels, or cursing nature for the fire that came down or the wind that blew the house that killed his children. Why is he cursing the day of his birth? And I think part of the answer is that Job, in his wildest imaginations and wildest dreams, never thought he would have walked through life this way. And he's been in so much suffering, so much pain, that he just wished it never happened. He wished that he never had to live this kind of life. But he does. He's alive. He was born, and he exists. And so that causes him to ask the question, why? Why am I still alive? What is my purpose? He asks that question three different ways in Job chapter 3. He asks it first in verse 11 where he says, why did I not perish at birth and die as I came from the womb? Why didn't I die in childbirth? If I had died in childbirth, I would be in the grave. Things would be peaceful and restful. I wouldn't have to experience all the things that I experience. Everything would be fine. Why? Why am I still alive? Why did I survive childbirth? And why am I still here? And then later on in verse 16, he says, and why was I not hidden in the ground like a stillborn child, like an infant who never saw the light of day? Why did I not die in the pregnancy portion? Why did I not die in the womb? That way I could have been born as a stillborn child, and immediately my parents would have had to place me in the ground. I'd be buried, I'd be at peace, and I wouldn't have to live a life where there's all this suffering. Why? Why am I still alive? Why did that not happen? And then finally, in verse 20, he says, why is light given to those in misery and life to the bitter of soul? That phrase, bitter of soul, in modern day terms, we would call that depression. And Job is saying, if someone doesn't want to live, why does God allow them to keep living? He says, I don't want to live. And why is it that God is allowing me to continue to live? Why am I alive? And what is my purpose? And I think what Job is asking and what he's trying to get at is that never in his wildest dreams or imagination did he think that he would live a life where he would lose everything that he has. And yet that's where he is. And he never wanted to be where he is. He never desired to be in a place where no one is around, where he's lost all of his family. And yet this is where he is. And so his question is, why? Why am I here? Why am I still alive experiencing all these things? When I think about Job's question, I think about widows. Widows who have lost their husband, who they were married to for years and years and years and years. And they wonder, I never thought I would be here without my husband. I never thought I would live through that kind of pain and that kind of suffering, and here I am. I never wished to be here, and yet here I am. And why? Why am I still alive? Or I think about parents who've had to bury a child. That's not the way it's supposed to be, right? Children are supposed to bury their parents, not parents burying their children. And when parents have had to go through that experience, I think they feel the same way. They wonder, I never thought I would be at this place. I never thought I would have had to go through this kind of experience. I never dreamed that I would have had to do this. And yet here I am, still alive, burying my child. Why? Why am I still alive? Or I think about someone who's been through some kind of disastrous situation, maybe been in war or been in some kind of natural disaster where people that they knew died, but they survived. And they wonder, why? Why did I have to go through this experience and see people that I know die? I never thought that would ever happen to me, and yet here I am still alive. Why? That's the feelings that Job has. Those are the thoughts that he has. He never thought he would be where he is, and yet this is where he is. He doesn't want to be where he is, and yet this is where he is. And so he's asking, why? Why am I still alive? Now, I want you to notice a couple things that Job isn't doing. Job doesn't curse God in chapter 3. Curses the day of his birth, says he doesn't want to be alive, but he doesn't raise his rebellious fist towards God and say that he hates God or that he curses God because of the pain and suffering he's been through. Doesn't do that. Second thing that I want you to notice that Job doesn't do is he doesn't pursue suicide. Some of the things he says, I think you could say, are borderline suicidal. But he does not pursue a path of harming himself or harming someone else. It seems as if Job still understands that death is something that is to come in God's time and not in his time. And yet still we see that Job is in a very dark place, a place where he is questioning his own existence and questioning what his purpose is in life and why he's still alive. Now, when I was a kid, there was an old hymn that we would sometimes sing called Farther Along. Anyone remember that song? You know, the chorus goes, farther along, we'll know all about it. Farther along, we'll understand why. What's the next line? Cheer up, my brother, live in the sunshine. We'll understand it all by and by. Job would have not liked that song. He didn't want to cheer up. He didn't want to live in the sunshine. And frankly, to be honest, he wasn't going to figure out farther along about what happened. He didn't like that song. He didn't want that song. Because he was in a place of darkness. He was in a place or because of the intense suffering and pain that he had been through, he didn't understand why he was alive. And someone coming to him and saying, cheer up, brother, was not going to help. And there are many people today who are in a similar dark place, who question their own existence, who wonder why they are still alive in the midst of all the pain that they've been through, who wonder what their purpose is, and who maybe even think that it'd be better for them to be dead than alive. Depression today is so prevalent among people emotionally as the common cold is prevalent among people physically. Suicide is one of the leading deaths of adolescence right now. And in our neighborhood, every 2 days, someone between the ages of 10 to 18 attempts suicide. Every 2 days. That's why we need to be inviting folks to Kids Hope Church. Because every 2 days, someone in our neighborhood is attempting suicide. And we're seeing this phenomenon over the past several years of these mass shootings at schools and public areas. And I know there's a lot of factors that are creating the environment for those kinds of things to happen. But I know that one of those factors is mental health and mental illness. And that people get in a dark place where they question their existence and they question why they're still alive and they question what the purpose of life is. And it gets really hard and difficult. And I know some of you have told your spouse or you've told a friend or you've just said it to your own self, to your own heart, things very similar to what I said at the beginning of the sermon. Things like, I wish I was dead. I wish I wasn't alive in this situation. I don't understand what my purpose is. I don't even understand why I exist. I know some of us wrestle with that from time to time. That there are occasions where it's almost like this black haze comes over our mind and our heart, and we can't see upward to God, and we can't see forward to any sense of purpose. We're just there in this darkness. Are you tracking with me? And that's where Job was. Job felt like God was hidden and he couldn't see him. And he felt like he couldn't see anything into the future. There was no sense of purpose. He was just in this dark cloud where all he felt was pain, suffering, isolation, loneliness, and no sense of purpose. And sometimes that's where we are. And the question is, well, what do we do when we're in that place? What do we do for someone who we love who's in that place? Well, we don't say, cheer up, brother, live in the sunshine, okay? Don't say that. It's not going to go well. And really the answer is we just hold on. We just hold on until the haze clears up. You see, there were a couple of realities that Job forgot. One of those realities was that God was there. He might have felt like God was hidden or God was absent, but God was actually there. And we know he was there because of what happened in Job chapters 1 and 2. Because God was very aware of who Job was. He knew everything about Job. He complimented Job because he understood and knew his life. He was invested in Job. He was there with Job. And I don't think that changed when we moved over into Job chapter 3. God's still there. Job might not feel he's there, but he's there. He knows exactly what Job is feeling and what exactly Job is thinking. But there was another reality that Job forgot, and that was that his life really did matter. That's how we got into this whole dilemma, is because Job chapters 1 and 2, Job's life mattered to God. His faith mattered to God. And God wanted to know, what kind of faith do you have? Because what kind of faith you have, it matters to me. And again, that didn't change when we get over to Job chapter 3. Job's life still matters to God. And he had forgotten those two realities, but they were true. And sometimes, if we can just hold on through that black, dark haze, sometimes we'll come out of that and we'll realize, I forgot this, but God was there and my life did matter. I think this is where the story of Jesus really helps us. Because Jesus had his time in the darkness. Did you know that? Jesus had time where he was grieved in his soul, the text says. And Jesus had time where he felt like God was hidden from him. He actually said on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? He had his time in the valley. But Jesus was able to move through that. And how was he able to do that? And I think the reason is because, number one, he knew that God was his Father and his Father was still there. Yes, it might not feel like he is there, but he still is there. He's his Father. But secondly, it's because Jesus knew that his life really did matter, that he was doing the will of the Father. When he was on the cross, he was doing the will of the Father. And because he knew that, it kept him moving forward. And I think it's the same way with you and me. When I know that my life matters because I'm doing the will of the Father, that gets me up out of bed in the mornings. It gets me out from underneath those covers. It gets me in the car. It gets me moving. When I know that when I preach or when I teach or when I bless or when I help or when I serve or when I'm doing any sorts of thing or when you're doing any sorts of things that you're doing to the glory of God, when you're doing what the Father wants you to do, it makes you know that your life matters and it keeps moving you forward. And if we can just hold on and keep moving forward, the haze starts to clear and we start to remember, oh yeah, God was there. And oh yeah, my life does matter. And what we find is that when we go through those dark times and those dark places, that actually our faith is stronger and deeper than it would have been without them. Philip Yancey said, "The kind of faith that God values seems to develop best when everything fuzzes over, when God stays silent, and when the fog rolls in." That's when faith really develops. Because it's in those dark times, in those dark places, in those times of depression where we are forced to open up our hearts to God in a way that we've never been able to before. Our hearts are cracked wider than they've ever been before in our past, and we're able to open up our hearts to God. And that's what Job needed. He didn't need a friend to come to him and say, "Cheer up, brother, live in the sunshine." He didn't need three friends to accuse him of wrongdoing, which is what's going to happen over the next several chapters. What he needed was he needed a friend to come and put his arm around him and say, "Job, hold on. Hang on. God is here and your life does matter. Open your heart to God, Job. Open it to God." That's what we need in those times. William Cooper was one of the greatest hymn writers in the 18th and 19th century. Maybe his most famous hymn is the hymn that says, "There is a fountain drawn, fountain of blood drawn from Emmanuel's veins." That's what it is. "And sinners plunged beneath that flood lose all their guilty stains." Remember that song? What's interesting about William Cooper is that for the last 25 years of his life, he struggled with severe depression. He often found himself in those dark places. He had suicidal thoughts. He connected with Job chapter 3. And in fact, there were even times where he went further than that and actually attempted suicide on himself. But William Cooper went to a church, and the preacher of that church was John Newton. John Newton wrote the song, "Amazing Grace." He understood grace. And John Newton applied that grace to William Cooper. And he became William Cooper's best friend. And he would come and he would spend time with Cooper and he would help him during those dark times. And he'd put his arm around him and say, "Cooper, hang on, man, hang on. God's here and your life matters." Cooper would go on to say later on in life that John Newton was his best and most affectionate friend because he was there helping him through those dark times. And I think understanding the context of William Cooper and the struggle that he went through, I think it brings more meaning to this hymn that William Cooper wrote. Listen to these words afresh, knowing his severe struggle with depression and suicidal thoughts. "God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Deep in unfathomable minds of never-failing skill, he treasures up his bright designs and works his sovereign will. Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds ye so much dread are big with mercy and shall break with blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower. Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his work in vain. God is his own interpreter, and he will make it plain. Cooper could write those words because he had been where Job 3 describes. He had been in that dark place, and he had questioned his existence, and he had questioned God. And because he had a friend like John Newton who encouraged him and loved him in those dark times, he was able to find faith and strength and come out of those dark places and find some light and to share that light with all of us. Lewis Smedes wrote in his book about a dark time that he went through. His wife was expecting a baby, and it was near term. And his wife started bleeding, and so they called the doctor immediately and said, she's bleeding, what should we do? He said, come, bring her to the emergency room immediately. He said, but I need to warn you, most likely your baby is going to be disfigured. Well, they rushed to the emergency room, and they're trying to process through this whole situation. What is life going to be like for them? What is it going to happen when this baby comes out, and how is their life going to change? And then they go to the emergency room, and she's wheeled into the OR, and they do the surgery. And the doctor comes out to Lewis and he says, congratulations, you have a beautiful baby boy. And he was so happy, thanking God for the miracle of what had happened and what had taken place. He goes back home and he showers and takes a rest for the night, gets up the next morning, gets a call from the hospital, from the doctor, says, you need to come quick, something's wrong. And he rushes back up to the hospital to be with his wife. And within a few hours, his baby is dead. And Smedes writes in his book that was the darkest time in his life because he was so mad at God and so disappointed with God. He didn't understand why he was where he was and why he still was alive instead of his baby. And what he found is that in order to get out of that dark place, he had to forgive God. He had to let go of his anger. And someone said, how are you able to do that? And this is what he wrote. When you forgive God, you just live in the silence and grope toward the goodness of life and believe that in spite of everything, he is my friend. What do we do when we're in that dark place? What do we do when we question existence? What do we do when we don't know why we're alive or what our purpose is? Here's what we do. We live in the silence. We grope towards the goodness of life. And we believe that in spite of everything, God is our friend. And we're your friends too. And we're going to have some spiritual leaders surround this auditorium. And if you've been in that dark place, maybe you are in that dark place right now. Maybe you're really struggling with life and struggling with your emotions and struggling with what's going on in your world. We're here to be your friend. We're here to put our arms around you and to pray with you and encourage you. We're here to remind you, hang on, God is there and your life does matter. Maybe you're ready to be baptized into Christ, have your sins washed away. We'd love to welcome you to God's family and let you experience the joy of being filled with the Spirit of God. We're going to have these men surround this auditorium at this time. If we can pray with you, encourage you, help you in any way, please come now. Together we stand and sing.